Hello, everyone, and we welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion. Today is Sunday, August 23rd, 2020, and we are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And we are so happy you could join us today. And I will mention it now. Our subject is Mind, a beautifully written lesson by Amanda. So, and we will start with our morning prayer.
From page 224 of the Blue Book. Oh, may the light that is never dim so encompass you that no night is there. May his angels hold thee in their power, and songs of science be heard in the intuitions of thought, so your life is in tune with the rhythm of God. Mary Baker Eddy.
Beautiful, thank you. Our watching point.
Watch number 175. Watch against a claim of inflexibility of thought. What could a potter do with clay that suddenly hardened under his molding? How can God guide man unless man remains flexible under the divine will? Any predetermined decisions constitute inflexibility, just as outlining in advance what you desire the divine mind to accomplish in demonstration is steadying the arc. The difference between formulating a problem correctly and outlining is one of motive, perception, and trust. One would not use demonstration to get an automobile, yet he could strive to realize that in doing God's work, he could not lack any proper expression of activity and abundance. Such a demonstration might be expressed in one's having an automobile. We must be strong and unmovable in our understanding of truth, but flexible in demonstration, in being guided by the Father's hand. End of watch.
Thank you. Comments on. I have to remind you, if you have your computer on, we will get an echo. You might not hear it. We hear it here, and you will be muted. Please turn your computers either down to silence or off. Thank you.
And if Sharon mutes you, it's trying to find the source of the problem.
So yeah.
Don't unmute yourself unless you have something to say.
Yeah, and don't take it personal.
It's nothing personal. We're just trying to get rid of the excess noise. We have a very sensitive mic.
And the people in 5 years on YouTube will be very happy.
Yes. Okay, that watching point.
I love this watch. I'm grateful. I didn't really think about it till today very much. I had, but I love flexible demonstration in the Father's hand. And I like the clarification about outlining. It's so easy to outline the definition thinking something has to specifically happen. And I appreciate that question.
Thank you. That's very true. We outline what we want to have happen. And if it doesn't happen, then we think somehow God has failed us. Well, God knows our needs, and we will get what we need, not always what we want, but what we need.
And God never fails us. But sometimes we fail to be flexible.
Yeah.
Right?
And this is
a very common problem for a lot of Christian scientists. They want something, and then they want to demonstrate it. So they pray for something, and this is so wrong. It is steadying the arc, and the same thing for health. If you're sick, you want to get healthy. Why? And the answer to that question, why, makes all the difference. You want to be healthy so that you can enjoy your lap of luxury in matter? Sorry, it might not happen. If you want to get healthy, to do God's work better, to be a better representative of God on earth, it'll happen.
And in that, being a better representative, not just to prove to someone, because that I've met can be very stiff on that. I just want to prove to my family that Christian Science, and that means that's not.
Thank you. No, that's not.
No, absolutely. And I've heard that a lot. You know, I want to show my husband or show. Well, that's all about you. That's all personal sense. It's a lot of ego, too. You don't have to prove anything. It's God that does the work anyway. And that type of thought has to be smacked down because it's wrong. That's not a motive, not to prove to others.
No, that attitude is self-righteous.
Yeah, yeah.
And it casts stone on a lot of hearts.
Someone, I think it was Carrie, wrote on the forum about everything doing for the glory, to glorify God. It's all for that, the glory of God. It comes quietly, not to prove anything. Your life should prove it. I read somewhere recently about, see if I can find it. Well, maybe it was one of those calendar statements for 2020 where your actions speak so loudly, I can't hear what you're saying. So, so anyway, last week I spoke of a little book. It's called A Layman Looks at the Lord's Prayer, and it's by Philip Keller. And Philip Keller was the one who wrote that beautiful book about Lass. And in this little book, he speaks about going to Pakistan, to a town, an ancient town called Peshawar, I believe, which is, he says, is a trading town in the northwest corner of Pakistan. And he goes to a potter's shop. Luann will be interested in this. He meets a man there who's been in the pottery business for years and years, elderly man, and his little humble shop was full of beautiful pieces of lovely goblets and various things that he had made on his potter's wheel. And he went to learn of him. He brought a friend, and this man had been taught by a master potter in China, and he loved his skill. And so he first tells about how they had to go back to this back shed where it was, I guess, this compost pile that this potter had made. And he said the smell was unbelievable. But anyway, the potter would get all this collection of various things to make clay. And he sticks his hand deep in it and pulls out this big blob of clay that he takes into his little shop to mold. And Philip Keller describes just the tremendous joy this man had on his face, you know, how much he loved doing it. I know, like Luann. And he likened it to Jeremiah 18:2, arise and go to the potter's house. So he said he's working, and he said it was interesting because every time he put his hands back to the clay, he had to dip them in water, I guess, to keep the clay moist while he molded the clay. And he said Philip Keller likened the water to the Word of God. He said the hands fashion us, but it's the Word of God that guides us and keeps us in the way, and that's why it's important we know what his word is. But he said, as this potter was working, there was some kind of stone or grit in the clay, and the potter's face changed not sort of one of concern. And Philip Keller points out to Jeremiah 18:4, and the vessel that made of clay was marred in the hand of the potter. And it says, despite his best efforts, he wasn't able to work with that clay because there was this resistance. The stones kept marring the clay into what he was going to make a beautiful goblet for Philip Keller. And so instead, he said he just had to make a small, a crude finger bowl from that same lump. It just wasn't working. And Philip Keller likens it to us under the hand of the master potter, which we know to be God. And then he says, despite his best efforts and endless patience with human beings, do they end up in disaster? Because of resistance, hardness of heart, they will not cooperate. They will not comply with his commands. Those tender, gracious hands are thwarted by stubborn will. And so he said, you know, what could have made a gorgeous goblet that would have been in a wealthy mansion or something was just put into a poor shack, a little finger bowl. And it didn't have anything to do with the potter, did it? It had to do with the clay, the molding. And I just thought it was such a beautiful analogy that he made. And so, and then he quotes Jeremiah 18:4. So the potter made it again, another vessel, as it seemed good to the potter to make it. He couldn't make it into the beautiful goblet, so he had to make it into something else. Did the best he could with that, all that resistance. And then he explains how he puts it on a shelf, and it has to, I guess, stay there for a while, and then it goes into a fire, and that makes a beautiful glaze on it. So in the Bible, we have so many analogies and things that are deep. You know, they go deep in the idea of God being a potter. And maybe it's partly why dear Luann, who built her own potter shop, and it does beautiful pottery, as well as we know does beautiful paintings. And if any of you want to either visit her and learn to make pottery or buy some of her pottery, she's got a whole collection of autumn, you know, things and Christmas things and pumpkins, and she makes all kinds of beautiful things. She made me a beautiful vase. She made Jeremy a little teddy bear that's waving and stands on his front steps to welcome people with the light. She made our grandson a beautiful lamp, and our granddaughters also a beautiful lamp, a base, just beautiful. So if any of you would like something like that or like pictures of what she does, it's quite extraordinary. Luann, did you want to add anything?
I'm just saying, come on up.
And she likes company. She's up in the North Country.
Very top of New York State.
Yep, up near the Canadian border.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to say about the pottery. When you're making something on the pottery wheel, I could picture everything you were talking about in the story. If there is something in the clay, sometimes there's a hard piece of sand or a chunk of clay that doesn't get worked in as well as it should. And it basically you have to cut that right off of your pot. And then instead of making something really tall and beautiful or thin, you end up removing part of the clay. So you end up with, like you said, just a little finger bowl or something like that when you had intended to make something else. So,
thank you very much. Yes. And this is the adamant of error. That's why, and the solvent is love, the dissolved. Go ahead, Florence.
No, it made me think of that. That's why our life should be in tune with the rhythm of God. I'm not so sorry. What I read.
I can't tell you how much I love that. I think of that often. Am I in the rhythm of God? If you're in that rhythm, it's just like riding a horse where you're just in that rhythm and you you're at the right place at the right time, doing the right thing, and you're just receiving his messages. It's really wonderful to strive for that rhythm. Thank you, Florence.
You have peace, quite a lot of peace living that way.
Yes, you do. Otherwise, you are, yes, antagonistic, rebellious, hard-hearted,
fearful,
negative. You're not doing as the Father would have you do, and he can't mold you. He just, it's not working. He has to put you away, aside for a while until you're ready. So I thought it was such a beautiful illustration, and it goes with that watching point of being flexible under the hand of God, not willful and planning and rigid, but flexible. So important.
Thank you for that. It reminded me of Laura Sargent talked about non-resistance being the key to understanding. And
that's beautiful. That's a great quote. Yes. Non-resistance being the key to understanding. Thank you. I love that. And you know, when you are resistant, your whole body tenses up. You can feel it, and you get the bit in your teeth, as they say. You're just willful, charging ahead no matter what. And you're usually, what's behind it is fear, resentment, hate. You're going to do what you're going to do, and nobody's going to tell you what to do. And it ends, as Philip Keller said, in disaster. Does not have to be that way. Have a loving hand molding us into something beautiful.
And your life and purpose gets small.
You do. That's it. Your life and purpose get small, and you've done it to yourself. Now, along with that, it was quite interesting because this week, Carrie in California sent me this, which I thought went along quite well. She said, I was recently speaking with my daughter, who wanted to share some changes in the thinking of social workers working in the field of social welfare. She explained there was a new trend in the field where workers were no longer encouraged to say, for example, he is a schizophrenic, but were now to say he is suffering from schizophrenia. I exclaimed, wow, this is what Christian Science teaches, separating the man from the false claim. She went on to describe why this was important and looked for a word to best sum up the issue being discussed, when I was again able to say, because when we call someone a schizophrenic, you label him, and then he accepts this label as his identity. But as she was speaking, I was following along at a different level of thinking, a spiritual view. She mentioned that although the mental approach had changed, there were problems with the people who accepted this old label as their identity. They wanted to be that label and didn't want to be known differently, having found importance in being seen by others as disabled with all of its benefits. So there was resistance to a better translation of the human concept of man. There we go.
Mm-hmm. I wish the same would happen to this thing, felon. I actually once was talking to a young man who called, just identified so closely, I'm a felon. I'm like, oh my goodness, that is sad.
Yes. So
you're not.
Yes. I have run into it too. With people, even with these physical problems, they blame, you know, it's their physical problem. I mean, I've had it, frankly, with people with menstrual problems with their menstrual cycle. That is why they are so so angry, so miserable, so upset. That is why. You take away that reason, well, no, then they can't blame it on something. You have to be willing to give up whatever that label is. And no, it's not you. I remember a while ago, I forget the circumstances, Florence, but you were talking about alcoholics and even Alcoholics Anonymous. You can't identify with it at all. Do you remember that? You were
Yes. Because it becomes the identity. I'm an alcoholic. You know, it's the same as, you know, I'm obese. you've taken on a different identity, and the inflexibility, as it says, of holding on to it and yet wanting to be free from it. This is resistance that we're talking about, unconsciously maybe, but still, it's that conviction of I am this, instead of being flexible enough for that wrong identity to be changed.
Thank you. Yes.
When they talk about when they talk to alcoholics and explain to them what's going on in therapies and things like that, they tell them that you're always going to be an alcoholic.
Yes.
And you're always going to be an alcoholic. They don't even give them an opportunity to step out of that identity. It's what you're always going to be. And I think that's part of the system that really fails people.
Thank you. Thank you.
And what is it about people who insist that they are an alcoholic, or that they are this, or that they are that? What is it about them that causes them to insist upon that sort of thing?
Defeatism. They just succumb to the whole thing.
Yeah, they don't want to accept responsibility for their own.
Not always, I wouldn't say. I don't know. I don't think. I think it's when you've been so, say you grew up in a certain place and that's what all you knew, that's all you've known. It's kind of difficult. I think the mercy of God here is very important.
You're absolutely right.
Yes. It's not always.
They think that's normal.
It's all
people who think it's normal don't know better.
So that is the grace of God and God's mercy. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mrs. Eddy said something that helped me when I was a nervous breakdown. Know thyself, and God will give the wisdom and occasion for a victory over evil. And it was you're not what you appear to be, but know thyself, what God made.
Thank you.
And stick to it. And eventually I saw my true nature.
Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. And that's the truth.
And this is the glory and the wonder and everything of Christian Science. This idea you're born a sinner, you'll be a sinner, you're going to die a sinner, you're sinner, 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 and it is your label. No, we are a child of God, beginning, during, always. And you cling to that right ideal. And this brings us into this lesson and the golden text, Lillian.
For as he thinketh in his heart, so is he.
Well, look at that. Thank you. Well, that fell in her place.
That's it.
So, what are you thinking? What are you thinking? And
get what you expect.
You get what you expect. And that's why over and over Mrs. Eddy talks about holding the right model. And if you've never had that right model, well, let's get it into you. Let's think about a right model. That's why it's so helpful to have the Carpenter books, who gives us the right model of Mrs. Eddy, the right model of Christ Jesus. Maybe there's somebody somewhere who's a right model to you that will help you formulate, at least what you would like to be in some ways. And then, of course, you let the master potter mold you into your unique beauty, which you all have. You don't have to be like somebody else, but you have to, get Florence said, if that's all you've ever known, you need a new model. You don't need the model of perhaps, a horrible past life, a family member or whatever. You need the new right model, Mrs. Eddy says.
Well, and also in Alcoholics Anonymous, the first step is saying that, there's an admission that they themselves are powerless over this thing, which I think people take to mean they're ceding their power. But the second step is we came to be aware that a power greater than ourselves, power with a capital P, could restore us to sanity. That is very similar to Christian Science. We release human will. and we turn it over to the divine mind.
Yes, thank you. And in all, I have read in every treatment for that, for drugs, it's always been God, the power of God, that has lifted people out. Nothing else will work. And just pumping them up with drugs certainly does not work. So it's the power of God. And when that is offered, that will pull a person out if they don't resist it and if they don't continue to claim that as their identity. And as I read from what Carrie wrote, the benefits they receive. I mean, some people are receiving all kinds of money and benefits to so they don't have to work. They just stay there. We know people who've never worked, but they just receive government benefits. And whatever they think their identity is, well, that keeps them, you know, getting benefits. So why bother to improve yourself? That is a sin, my friends. It's a sin that we enable it. And it's a sin that it continues because you are depriving a person of their divine right to be a child of God. So
I think here the workers, people working with individuals like this, they're thinking about them, their clients. It's also very, very, very important. I say that because as a Christian Science nurse, it was our thinking going into any room or seeing any patient that was most uppermost to be right.
Thank you for that, Florence, because this applies not only to how you think about yourself, mm-hmm. it also applies to how you think about others.
Thank you. Yes. Yep.
Because the way you think about others is the way you are going to experience your own life.
Mm-hmm. And if you see them as a poor, miserable mortal who've always been this way, always will be this way, or a poor, annoying mortal who's just never going to do the right thing, well, then you are feeding into something you don't want to. The greatest gift, and I think it was Bicknell Young who said this, the greatest gift you can give anyone is to see them as a child of God. That's why we say, Hail, Son of God. And that is why, yes, as Carrie explained in this article, you separate the error from the person. The person is a beautiful child of God. The error seems to have some kind of a hold on it. You have to rebuke that error, destroy the error, and let the man go free. And if you see it impersonally like that, you will be able to do it. If you don't, and you sympathize and see him as a poor mortal, and you don't want to hurt his feelings, and maybe you should just continue to give him money and money and more money or whatever else he wants, more drugs, whatever he wants, you give it, try to make him happy, you will just prolong the agony. So, Gary's going to read what Parthens wrote on the forum.
Yeah, Parthens quoted a few things, starting with, for as he thinketh in his heart, so is he, from Proverbs, and then from Galatians. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. And then he quoted a poem from James Allen. Evermore man takes the tool of thought, and shaping what he wills brings forth 1,000 joys, 1,000 ills. He thinks in secret, and it comes to pass. Environment is but his looking glass. And then from Science and Health, stand porter at the door of thought, admitting only such conclusions as you wish realized. And from Christian Healing by Mary Baker Eddy, I saw how the mind's ideals were evolved and made tangible, and it matters not whether that ideal is a flower or a cancer, if the belief is strong enough to manifest it. And from first edition of Science and Health, if mind can kill, as has been proved, it has power to cure also.
Now, this is what we were talking about. And once you learn in science, you know, maybe you didn't know better at first, But after you start reading Science and Health, this truth will make you free, and you will see the power of right thinking. Mrs. Eddy has said, a right idea must manifest itself. Now, I used to worry about, well, you know, what if I just can't control my thinking, and what I greatly feared had fallen upon me. That quote from Job used to scare me to death. So I had to realize that if you align yourself with God and the thoughts of God, that's truth, that's reality. If you go into this other thing of worry and fear and, you know, think you've got some physical problems, incurable or whatever, well, you're just going into the Adam dream. And it is a dream. And it's no more true than 2 + 2 = 5. And you might be working that problem out over and over, 2 + 2 = 5, but that does not make it true. And in her article, Body, Mrs. Eddy says, you know, that this false thinking, and we must remember this false thinking, this negativity, this fear, whatever it is no more true than the physical problem. It's all error. It's all wrong. And in that way, I cured myself of this fear that, oh my gosh, you know, I can't just control my thought. I'm just so fearful. Bignell Young says, go ahead, fear all you want. It has no power if it's not of God. And if you slip into that Adam dream, and it doesn't matter how long you've slipped into it, you can wake up and get out of it. It's not true. So remember these things, and remember, yes, as you thinketh. So watch, ask yourself when you get a thought, do you want this thought manifested in your life?
That feels to me like the responsibility, sort of what Gary might be talking about too, that there is that piece. Because I know for me, I needed the grace of accepting some of the things I did, but I also needed to stop using it as a blame tool and take responsibility for my thinking.
Yes. When you start off new in science, it's true. You need the mercy and grace of God because you've been taught nothing. But after a while, once you start getting this truth, if you rebel and resist it, then this is when the time is to take the responsibility. We all have to.
Yeah. Well, when you know better, you do better, right?
Exactly.
When you know better, you do better.
And there's a statement that Mrs. Eddy made, and I'm sorry, I don't know where it is, where she says something to the effect that the greatest alms that we can give someone is to enable them not to accept alms.
Yeah, that's it. Preface of miscellaneous writings, the very beginning of prose works. Read it, because I can't pronounce half those words.
Oh, yes. Yes, thank you. The beginning of prose works. A certain apothegm of the Talmudical philosophy.
see what I mean?
Suits my sense of doing good. It reads thus, quote, the noblest charity is to prevent a man from accepting charity. And the best alms are to show and to enable a man to dispense with alms, end quote.
Now, that doesn't mean we don't have tremendous compassion, and we do help those in need always. But those who are worthy will take the help, and then they'll rise up and use it and go on their way.
Well, I wanted to add to that standing in the gap, that happened to my grandchild. I didn't accept it, and he was begging money from people. And I just stayed, coming here had me learn it. I stood in the gap, and after a year or so, he just bought a car. There's a job.
Well, what do you mean about what does that mean to stand?
Well, stand in the gap is knowing that God has control over him, and that his life is controlled by God, and that I could trust that. I didn't have to figure anything out for him. And I didn't always say things to him because he was at one point not listening. But when you stand in the gap, you know that God is in total control. That's what it means to me.
Yes.
And you never stopped caring.
And I never stopped.
No, you never.
In the right way.
In the right way. That's the real love. That's the real compassion. Because I remember that her grandson wanted to borrow her car all the time.
That's another one, yeah.
Oh, that's another one. Well, anyway, eventually... She got where, you know, it was time that he get a job. He demonstrate his own car. That word enabling. Who's speaking?
No, go ahead. I'll speak when you finish.
Oh, I'm done. Go ahead.
No, I think is the even if you had to give temporarily, the giving with the right thought about the man is essential. It's imperative, in fact. If you're always thinking right about them, sooner or later they will change.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. If a man is hungry, you give him a fish. But then you teach him how to fish. Mm-hmm. So that he doesn't have to.
There's so much more dignity in that. And the person within, it's amazing that seeing that work. That when you see the difference between people just getting hands out and people learning how to do it for themselves, and then they want to care for what they have.
That's it. You teach them gratitude. They when they, you know, we all know when we earned our first whatever it was. I remember my first job, I bought a new coat. I love that coat I wore for years and years and years. It's probably my most favorite coat in my whole life because I
earned it
and it felt so great. And we all have our stories like that. There's a sense of dignity and worth. Man was created to work, 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 watch and pray. We all love to work. And if you think you don't, then there's something not right.
Work three times.
Yeah, three times. Work, work, work. So it's part of who you are as God made you, with that beautiful goblet. We all have something within us to do and to give, and it's there, and we don't want to suppress that in anyone or keep them from finding their true identity in God. That is true love. That is true caring. Sometimes it has to be a tough love. And every incident, every case is different. We can't tell you what to do in any case.
No
some case, yep, you might give for 50 years. Another case, you don't do it at all. Everything is different, just different. And by give, I mean give maybe materially. I don't know. God knows. And if you are listening, he'll tell you the right thing.
I just want to say something I've noticed about, there's a few people I know that fit this. They've been told so long that they have no value to give that eventually they believe it. And, you know, what a sad thing that is. But to come here and to learn, you know, that God has a place and a purpose for everyone and how good it feels to live that purpose, you wouldn't want to deny that to anyone. So
exactly.
Yeah.
You see, this is why people go on drugs. It's why they want to commit suicide. They haven't found their purpose. It's terribly depressing. And that potter, our potter, has a purpose for us all. And it's a wonderful purpose. So if anyone is unhappy or miserable at the moment, it's just because they haven't found that yet. And they will and they can. And if they've been brought into your life, you are an agent to help them. And we're all, as I've said, you're a practitioner. We are all practitioners. And this work, people are brought into our life. Sometimes you'll think, good God, why did this person come into my life? Well, there's a reason for that. Ask God, and he will tell you. Sometimes it's just a smile and a kind word, as my dad liked to say. But other times it requires more. But love, 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 love more. Love is the answer. Always, always. But not the love that sympathizes, but the love that raises up. Compassion. Compassion.
And that's the only thing that will dissolve that hard stone of resistance.
Mm-hmm.
It melts the stone.
Yes.
Now, and the definition of adamant, the definition of adamant is an imaginary stone of impenetrable hardness. So the stone never was real anyway.
I never heard that. Thank you. Right. That's great. There you go.
Another boast of Goliath, right?
Yeah. Yes. Now I'm going to take just a brief detour because I've and praying about the Bible study. And these are the dates we're going to have our Bible study, because it's coming up in September now. It's the weekend after Labor Day. So it'll be Saturday the 12th, September 12th, and September 26th, then October 10th, then October 24th, November 7th, November 21st, December 5th, and then December 19th. And that'll bring us into Christmas and the New Year. So we'll post those things again.
Yeah.
But just because I know some of you are going to be Bible moderators, we're going to have a lot of exciting things. Tom has good ideas, Mike. So we'll have a wonderful Bible session coming up in the fall. Now, another thing that I thought goes with this lesson, Susan had written about washing your hands on the forum, making clean the outer platter, and how she didn't realize what exactly what that meant. And it means what's in the inside is what matters. And last week I brought up that sitcom, a British sitcom, Keeping
Up Appearances.
Yes, yeah.
Hyacinth.
Yes, Hyacinth. She was the star of that. Now, this week I just had the most delightful, Florence and I had the most delightful testimony about that. It was someone who, well, as a child, she had gone to a Broadway show that she'd loved very much. And the person that plays Hyacinth, and Hyacinth is the one that's just bending over backwards to keep up appearances. It's very funny in the sitcom. Anyway, in the song, in the musical, she loved it. And the star was Patricia Rutledge, who played Hyacinth. And anyway, this person who's writing this testimony, she said, she had gotten very ill. She said she had a glorious healing I thought you might enjoy. A few years ago, I had a rather alarming situation that had a glorious healing, but it returned a few months later. As I was praying and making progress, I found myself in Little Rock, Arkansas, in a bit of a downtrodden hotel. Every morning, I'd take my walk to a nearby park. One morning, an old song I hadn't heard in years came into my head. So I found it on YouTube and began playing it over and over on my walks. Singing, and she also says that this Patricia Rutledge, she won a Tony that year for her performance. And she sang this song in the show. And she said, singing this song as I tromped through Little Rock helped break the mesmerism, because I heard it as mortal mind's refusal to give up its old story of how life should look, even as progress and love present itself. Even presenting its way as God's way. So the song is called Not on Your Nelly. and I thought not to play it, but Jeremy's going to play the first minute and 26 seconds, because it is just so refreshing. And the words, and this is what you say, when Era comes knocking on your door, you tell it, not on your Nelly, your bloomin' blinkin' Nelly. Absolutely, positively no. That's what she sings. And, you know, Mrs. Eddy has said, whatever heals, be it song, sermon, or science. And so this person who had this healing found healing in this song. And Era doesn't like to be laughed at. And this is laughed at. So here we go.
Wanted me to be a lady, would he have allowed me to be born in Putney? So if I become a lady now, that would be going against his will, would it not? Oh, Daphne. Sydney. Bertie. The old
It goes on, but and we're going to put that on our website because that, you know, get thee behind me, Satan, that works, but not on your Nelly. Your blooming, blinking Nelly. Absolutely, positively, no.
That's good. I've been saying, get thee behind me, Satan, for 7 years now.
Time to change. Not on your Nelly.
And I can see it brought healing. She sang it over and over, and it healed her. And I would have her tell the story, but I believe she likes to be anonymous. So anyway, I will respect that. But so thank you. That was just so delightful. And there's so many times I've been healed through a good laugh. A merry heart maketh like a medicine. Yeah. And again, you as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. You cannot be all depressed and negative and not have that seem to come out in various ways. It's just a red flag, Carpenter calls it, to change your thought and know the enduring, the good, and the true. And I love it. Shardy wrote about it, and it's in the lesson. Such a beautiful lesson. Thank you, Amanda. Whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue and if there be any praise, think on these things. That's why those are the things we think about. It's so tempting right now not to. And just a sobering note, in case of you haven't noticed, you know, our country seems to be in a war.
It is in a war.
It is in a war, yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been in that war for a while. It is totally abnormal to have shootings and cities being burned. It's been going on for a while. It's been gathering and it seems to be its momentum. Science has the answer and we will stand strong. This election coming up, you know, they're saying no matter who wins, all hell will break loose. Well, we can change that.
Not on your Nelly.
Not on your Nelly. And not on our watch. So we stand strong with this truth. We don't allow it. And as much time as you have to devote to watching and praying and knowing, right thought must manifest itself. We're not going to accept this. This is not true. Our country, people get along here. We love each other. We've had there's always room for improvement. But good grief, it's been outside influences. As I told you, I saw it in Plainfield. I saw it with my own eyes. What happened? Creating riots and all this stuff going on. It was not the people in the town. It was outsiders who had nefarious motives.
They had ulterior motives. Yes, they were so grossly misled that they thought that what we have here is not good. It's such an improvement for mankind the world over. It's such a good example for everybody else in the world. And most of the people around the world who know what's going on appreciate it. But there are a few who want to tear it down. It's up to us to make sure it doesn't happen.
And as we think, so it will be. So we hold the correct concept in thought. And that it's the divine government. It's God's government. And there's steps to that, I suppose. There are certain people who are better at that than others. So we look for that, for those who are going to promote Christianity.
And we encourage it. We promote it.
Yes.
The glass may be half full, but it's not half empty. It's half full. We want to see it fuller, not emptier. And we think on these things because these things, honest, just, pure, these things are God manifest.
Yes.
These are the manifestations of God. And that is what we glorify.
And it is what has been true in our country, and it's true of every nation, because every nation has these good qualities. So that we glorify, we magnify, and build on it. Not tear down, we build up. That's what a scientist does, builds up. So we will conclude with Martha Wilcox.
Martha Wilcox in her article entitled War. History shows that every epoch has its spiritual values, and happy are we who discern the spiritual values at this time. Referring to our present time, our textbook says, quote, as material knowledge diminishes and spiritual understanding increases, real objects will be apprehended mentally instead of materially, end quote. That's from Science and Health. Jesus set forth clearly and definitely what should be our attitude of thought in these, quote, latter days, and why we should have this attitude of thought. He said, quote, when these things begin to come to pass, then look up and lift up your heads, end quote. Why? For your redemption draweth nigh. And that's Luke 21. Our redemption from what? Our redemption from the false concepts, the veil which has darkened man's vision, and which is done away in Christ. Christ, the truth about all things, is our Redeemer, and our redemption is at hand. We do not look at the destruction of matter as the destruction of something, but as the passing away of the false material concept of substance. This false concept of substance hides the omnipresence of man and the universe of reality. How readest thou? How seest thou? Instead of viewing the present time with dismay, Christian Scientists should assume their divine responsibilities. Each of us can and should assume the responsibility of handling the errors in his own thinking. We should do just this, as if we were the only one upon whom rested the responsibility for the correction to be made. In this way only do we work out our own salvation, and at the same time aid in working out the salvation of the world.
For as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.